Q&A is usually the best part of a talk. So, questions to begin with.
Yes. I thought your talk was just beautiful, and I thank you for that. One of the things that I was I'm interested in is I've seen how the brain is measured and the synapses fire and all that, so I kind of understand that measurement. I'm wondering about the heart measurements, the way that you show the field and the energy around that. How is that really quantified?
It's done by mathematical formulas following physics principles, Mary, and that's about all I know, but that is a simulation, a computer simulation, mathematically formed from signals received by instruments that can measure subtle things. For instance, the first time I ever heard that instrumentation could pick up subtle things like this was when I was a student at Stanford, and Ogle Worrell was still alive. I don't know if any of you know much about Ogle Worrell, but she was an internationally known healer, a healer at a distance. Ambrose and Olga were phenomenal people, and they actually were able to heal. And she was on, I think, a national tour, perhaps for her book. All I know is that I had a chance to go and listen to Olga, who stood up there looking like my mother, a little fox stole around her shoulders, a little hat perched on her head, and she spoke as if she were speaking to a women's club and to a largely skeptical audience at Stanford, until she told this story. She said, oh, well, actually, I was in Japan, and they wanted to wire me up for some reason to see if they could measure what happened when I did my healing. And I said it didn't matter to me where I was when I sat down to do that two-hour healing in the afternoon. I was perfectly happy to sit in their laboratory, and I did so. They hooked me up, I closed my eyes, and I went inside. My mind always knows when the 2 hours have passed, and I opened my eyes and took off the circuits, and my lab technicians all said, oh, so, yes, very happy. They said, yes, we caught you on all of our instruments. She said, just as I was leaving, the door opened, and a very irate pair of lab technicians from the building across the street came over to say what in the world was going on in this laboratory, because the signals that I had been sending out had interrupted the work that they were doing. So, yes.
I don't know how fair this question is, but I'm going to do it anyway.
All right.
I've been a hospital chaplain and been with people as their bodies close down. So where does the energy, where's all that energy, where does it go?
Well, if it's true that energy is never actually lost, then if it evolves, my sense of it is that it devolves as well. I don't know that there is a signature, although people talk about this. There's some trace of a signature left behind sometimes, but I have no studies that I can cite that support that. So that, I'm sorry, I'd love to answer that, but I have a feeling that there are people that work on that, and there may be someone in this audience who could offer an answer. Yes, Jim.
I was looking at your tracings of the heart, and I came up and clarified with you, those are not EKG tracings.
All right.
Those were EKG tracings. They're all fatal arrhythmias.
I said EEG tracings.
She clarified that this was part of the orbital loop,
yes.
The communication between the heart and the brain. That electromagnetic field that you were showing, the visual manifestation of that is the aura. Some people can see other people's auras.
Yeah.
And it's part of the basis for healing touch. And I forget, but I think blue and green auras, people who have those have more gift in healing touch. I may be wrong on the colors, but that's the visual manifestation of this field. The other thing I wanted to mention is, despite all the development that our body and our brain has gone through, we still have gills. In early development, there's a series of gills, just as there are in aquatic animals. All of the gills disappear except for the third pair. That's your ear canal and your eustachian tube.
Jim, that's wonderful. So there are evolutionary gills. I appreciate Jim's comment because I don't know where your churches are in this, but between Trinity Church and All Saints, two Episcopal churches here in town, we are in our fifth year of developing a healing presence practice between the two churches, certifying healing touch practitioners, and slowly, takes a long time to change a church culture, we'll eventually reach parents, teaching them about these calming touches. All of this is just arising now as a new ministry. Thank you, Jim. Yes.
About the stages of consciousness.
Yes.
I wanted to know, it implies we all start at the same level, you know, and it parallels the physical development. And how do we explain then when some children, almost since very early childhood, appear to have a certain spiritual maturity? So it seems like there's an existing higher stage already apparent in early on. And why is that? Is it transmitted?
Well, I can give you two answers. The first is that all of these studies are normative studies. That is to say that they reflect statistically across a population what those general areas of growth are. But for children who come in with extraordinary gifts, they are undoubtedly just more connected. It may have something to do with the pregnancies of their mothers. Some very interesting studies, in utero studies, have been done about the quality of pregnancy and the children who emerge very happy, safe, unhampered pregnancies produce children that have a lot more synapses and dendrites connecting up in the prefrontal brains. Children who are born in unhappy, dangerous, anxious-ridden pregnancies are born with those same interconnectors all down with the lower brains. The heart knows what the heart knows, and it knows that this child is going to need those survival intelligences as they emerge, whereas the other child is gifted, as it were, with these others. So there are many factors, I think, that move into it. But Ken is very, very clear about one interesting thing. We tend to think that childhood, with its innocent openness, with its easy access to all of these different states, is equivalent to, say, the mystic who is peering out at the heavens. Not so. These are pre-states, but they must be guarded and protected in childhood so that they can become the foundation for those same states to reemerge empowered by the adult brain.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, one last question. For an adult who wants to consciously move into higher states, would you say meditation alone can't do it? There has to be also a conscious self-work for the neuroses, which meditation doesn't necessarily take care of?
Meditation may let some of that emerge. In fact, if you're working on the shadow, as you'll get, I can't remember which chapter it is, The Shadow Knows, Thomas Keating has been very eloquent about what happens in meditation. Very often, if you're doing the work in the other parts of your life, then it can eject very often through the causal state. It just takes care of itself then. But we are whole people. We are people of mind and heart, emotion, psyche, and we are meant to clean up our act. If we're going to be able to move into these higher states, they burn out, they will burn out the dross that we bring, or else they'll be smothered by it. This is work, but it's wonderful work. Meister Eckhart says it well. I think we're more like what he said in this particular quote. He said, there is no stopping place in this life, nor is there ever one for any person, no matter how far along the way one's gone. But always be ready for wonderful surprises. Yes. Well, the heart acts by means of receptive and transmitting neurons. They are the little mechanism of the information exchange. Yes.
So if you have a heart,
I would love to have the expertise to answer that accurately. I was asked that question by Jackie Reed. Jackie, raise your hand. I think you two ladies should talk to each other afterwards. You may each be able to share some information about that. I could make some guesses, but I do really have no clinical information. Yes? Oh, yeah, mini driver.
Her heart was transplanted into a lady who had been waiting for many years, and the husband somehow, through synchronicity or some way, he got connected with this lady that had this right heart. He didn't know it. They fell in love, and it turned out to be a good story. When he was so attracted to her, and they were just so connected, so drawn. So the thing was moving a lot.
Return to me. Stories. Yeah. Stories in fiction very often will catch a truth in ways that science can't. Yes, Tom.
Speaking of movies, don't forget that there's a movie about the transmigration of souls that stars Steve Martin and Lily Tomlin. It's called All of Me. All of Me, and it's a hoot.
One of my favorite movies.
Yeah. I was thinking about the conversation we've had about the aura and how it's represented. And I'm going back in Western culture now to a painting by El Greco of the what's called in the Greek tradition the Dormition of the Virgin, what we call the Assumption, yes. But it represents Mary on her deathbed, and then up here is Christ in heaven, and coming up to Christ is this very small whitish representation of Mary's soul being lifted up like this. Pardon?
Swaddled.
Okay, swaddled like a baby. In other words, there's many representations of souls as rather diminutive versions of the body that they just left. But I've been doing hospice work here in Santa Barbara for volunteer work for about 10 years, and I met a Reiki master who works at as part of our group, and I asked her, what about that? Can you tell a person, what happens to a person's aura when they die? Is it something small that just kind of filters away? And she said, oh no, she said, on the deathbed, the aura begins to expand and expand and expand. And I had no idea, but on maybe two or three occasions, I've been in a room where someone was actively dying, and I just put my hands up like this, and I try to feel the aura. Now, maybe I'm fooling myself, but I can tell you that when I'm this far away from John and I feel his aura, John, you're in trouble. You're almost out of here. But if it's right about here, it feels about right for normal people. At least that's what I was told, experienced. I don't know if you have any
thoughts. What a wonderful, wonderful answer, Tom. Let me have you all do a little experiment. We always begin any kind of energy work with three deep breaths. We call them the prayer of three deep breaths over at All Saints. But let's just be comfortable. Put your things down for a moment and just breathe deeply three times. Big belly breath. Again. And just keep gently breathing. You've just sent your heart the signal that all is well. You're not tensed. No cortisol running. It is beginning to soften into its coherent form. Now take your hands, please, and start rubbing them together. And I'm going to ask you to rub them together for my count of 30. 1, 2, three, four, really rub, 5, 6, faster, 7, 8, yes, vigorous rubbing, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, keep going, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30. Now hold them apart and gently, gently bring them together, and you can feel a little ball, a little resistance of energy between them. Back and forth until you feel that little presence of energy. Back and forth until it's palpable and you can feel it between your hands. The centers of our hands are energy portals. With training, they're always available, but usually we have to stimulate our own hands to feel this. Now that you've got this established, this little energy field between your hands, gently, while they're still tingling, bring them up above your head. Do this with your eyes closed so you don't have to embarrass yourself. And gently bring your hands down and see if you can begin to feel a little sense of your own energy field, the sort of field that Tom was just talking about. It's not far out, but you can begin to feel it.
I don't know if it's just thermal or if it's something else.
Yes. You can bring your hands near your face. You'll feel that thermal heat, but your hands will pick up this edge of your field. If you're quiet enough, one can begin to feel the shimmer of energy just along the skin level all over one's body. These are the beginnings of the subtle field. And eventually, with healing work, things really do heat up without rubbing your hands. It's part of the interaction, I suspect, the energetic interaction as we work together. Another question now. Oh, and then you will be next. Thanks. I won't forget you.
Not a question, just a comment. Regarding children and their energy and their
closer,
okay, and their ability to intuit, it has been my experience and after experience that Jesus loved the little children, and I think he speaks to them in a very special way, in a different way than he speaks to me. He has to hit me on the back of the head sometimes before I listen. And I have experienced this intuitiveness in children. I mean, little children, like 4, 5, 6, and 7, firsthand. And at the time that it happened, being a young parent myself, I really wasn't aware of what was going on. But now when I look back, I can see there are many instances when my children were teaching me.
Oh, yes.
And I did not hear them.
Yes.
Another form I have experienced is one of my children had a miraculous healing within the first year of their birth. He was written off as, we don't know what it is, after. And this went on for 6 or 8 months. And we ran into, I was introduced to the charismatic renewal this way. Ran into someone who said, have you tried praying on him yet?
Mm-hmm.
So we went and we prayed on him. And within a week, the pain that he had was gone. And what he had inside him, they had x-rayed inside his stomach and gotten everything, was all irritated and red. And Everett Koop, who was then ran Children's Hospital in Philadelphia, who was a very devout man, a Quaker.
Oh, yes, he, Surgeon General.
Yeah, yeah. He said to me, he said, Ed, you know, there are some things we doctors would like to claim, but he said, this isn't one of them. Yeah.
It's a wonderful story.
And that child, okay, would many times, through his growth, come up with statements that were off the wall. They were statements of, as I would reckon, a 25, 30-year-old person. Mm. And he didn't think about it. He just blurted them out.
Yeah.
Now, the world caught up with him, told him no.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the way to live, not that. And I'm sure that that buried him under that.
Yeah.
So that's my experience. But I still have several children who one of them makes his living by being intuitive in the entertainment industry. And another one, well, they all are into the arts. But I think it's really, like, we have grandchildren now. We can really listen to our grandchildren, you know.
Oh, yes.
And ask them more. You know? So thank you.
Thank you. Wonderful stories of the heart's intelligence in action. Over here, please.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, what, can people hear me?
Yes. Yeah.
What place, how does culture sometimes impede with our own movement toward this? Because I'm even aware inside myself, I know our culture is one of doing and, you know, all the goals. So when you begin to think of this deeper place, this place where you let go, there's part of you that says, if I just practice, you know, I get there. And so what role does culture impede our own movement toward the divine, toward that holy place within?
Almost always. The culture is a dilute, collective awareness. It is your state that will allow you to make those connections with the divine, with those causal and manifesting areas of your life. The culture is slowly changing. The culture of churches is even slowly changing. But remember, it's always fighting a rear guard action. And to the extent that you can honor it, accept and cooperate with it, fine. And make your own way, if you can. You already have. You are a culture. Word and Life is its own small culture. It's been going on for a long time. Think of the support. Think of the stories, the combined wisdom. I look out at you all and a lot of you are going gray the way I am. We're at just about the right age for all of this, you know. Elders naturally are ready for this kind of work, if only we understood and knew it for what it is. Yes.
I was going to comment that my grandson at about age 9 or 10 could see auras, and he didn't feel funny telling us about them. But the thing that I thought was so interesting about it was in his revealing his ability to do this and us not laughing, I guess, another one of my daughters said, I've been doing that for years, and she had that capability, but she thought she was so odd and strange to do that she didn't feel the freedom to say until Nathaniel was able to talk about it. So it was a wonderful gift to all of us. The other thing I wanted to say was about Reiki, that when I was very ill, two of my daughters do Reiki, and they were working on me, and I was ill, and I was captivated by what Tom said about the distance away, because they were laughing about how big my energy field was. Maybe I was dying, and they thought, oh my goodness, you know, she has so much energy. But that's a marvelous process that is laughed at or not put down by the Catholic Church anyway, and not encouraged at all. So it has a wonderful healing aspect to it.
Absolutely, and it means that we are taking authority ourselves. It means that we are looking inside ourselves for those answers. This is very suspicious stuff. And the hierarchy and the institution never like it. When I think about children and I think about elders, we also have something in common that I would like to leave you with this morning. And it is this very interesting fact. This is work that was done by Nathan Epstein at Brandeis University. And he found that in the brains that he was examining, the brains of children showed growth spurts of axons and dendrites just between all the gray matter at specific intervals. If Piaget indicated, and these intervals to a certain extent match up, these unvarying statistically accurate levels of development within children, Brandeis counted them. And he found that at about every 6 years across a child's life, there is this great spurt of axons and dendrites in the brain itself. At around the time that we lose our teeth, around the time of 12-year-old molars, at around the time 18 of the wisdom tooth advent, our bodies are grown by then. We don't have these markers anymore. But nevertheless, at around 24, Epstein notices something else, and I suspect that that has a great deal to do with what we don't know about Jesus' background, with what we don't know about the Buddha. We don't know how old Lao Tzu was when he made his first enormous breakthrough, but there's something that happens around 24. Just keep taking it forward, because Epstein found that 30-year-old brains, late 30s brains, whoosh, mid-40s brains, whoosh, 60, 62 brains, whoosh, 70-year-old brains, whoosh. The 95th year is the last brain he got a chance to really look at. They continue into the 90s. What is this all about, my dear elders? These are connections of intelligence waiting to be myelinated. If they are not used and wired into action, they will eventually just whoosh, go away. So the things that we are learning are that mystical states may be the gift of a few of us, but all of us can learn them. All of us can practice together and become our own culture. When a culture surrounds us, when we feel safe and well-regarded, when we can appreciate one another, our hearts are coherent. And we then access much more intelligence, information fields than we ordinarily would have done so. So as a culture, Word in Life, I leave you with this challenge, not only to be good to each other, but to support our growing spiritual intelligence. I'll be glad to stay after and talk to those of you who would like to ask further questions. Is there one burning question at the very end? In that case, let me close with yet another quote from one of my favorite mystics, who speaks about the unobstructed reality that we move into in these flow states that we can sustain with practice, with intention. And we haven't even touched on the work of intention here, but that's an enormous field that has everything to do with these higher states of consciousness. Rumi says, out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and right doing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Pat, and we'll...